This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Some girls, as young as 12 years old, are being forced to get married in Texas. Frequently, the husband is much older, and the child bride is now living a life of servitude and exploitation with no hope of escape. In Texas, almost 7 out of every 1,000 teens between the ages of 15 and 17 married in 2014, second only to West Virginia. Senate Bill 1705 would make it much more difficult for anyone under 18 to get married. It passed, and it's on Governor Greg Abbott's desk, waiting to become law. Texas Senator Van Taylor, a Republican from Plano, sponsored the bill.
Looking at the situation in Texas where minors do not have to give any form of consent to marriage, and reading the stories of children who were forced into marriages was just heartbreaking. It was really, it was impossible to read their stories and not feel compelled to act. And so what 1705 does is it requires the child to be emancipated prior to a marriage.
Emancipated means that they would go before a judge and there would be some process. It's not just a simple rubber stamping, but actual an inquiry into what's happening.
Sure. So under current Texas law, a 16 or 17-year-old can be married with one parent signature and no other approvals, just one parent signature. A 15 and younger can be married with one parent signature and the approval of a district court judge. And children recently have been married as young as age 12. And so that is, so that is the current status of law in Texas today. And again, what is shocking to me is there's no requirement for the child's approval. Requiring emancipation first, and a child can only be emancipated at age 16 or 17, requires them to go in front of a district court judge to have the district court judge determine that they have the maturity and the wherewithal to be independent, and as a matter of practice requires both parents' approval and the child, and of course the child's approval. So that in turn makes sure that the child is ready to be on their own, and then once they're on their own, they can make the decision or not at their discretion whether or not they would choose to be married.
And if they're emancipated at that age and then they get married, then they basically can function as an adult and then they would be able to access services, things from the state, and if maybe leave the marriage if that's to their advantage.
Right. And I mean, one of the things that's sort of surprising about the current system that Texas has is that upon the marriage certificate, the child is emancipated. And so it seems to me, let's emancipate the child if the child wants to be emancipated. And then if they want to be married, they can be married. And if they have the means to leave a marriage, they're then in a position to leave. Children are necessarily indigent. They don't have no means of supporting themselves. And so when you take an indigent child, put them into a marriage, they really don't have the ability to leave. The big thing to me is a marriage should be between two willing people. It should be between two people who love each other and want to be married. And right now in Texas, we allow parents to marry children without the child's approval. And that 1705 seeks to end that.
Texas is second in the country for the number of underage marriages after West Virginia, and possibly the highest rate of underage marriages. Mm-hmm. Were you shocked to learn that?
Yes. It is shocking to me, the rate of underage marriage in Texas. And again, I want to make sure that marriage is between two people that want to be married. And that's what Senate Bill 1705 is trying to do.
Still, there is no bottom number. If you can work yourself around the emancipation issue, people can get married at any age. There's still no basement for when you can get married in Texas.
Texas only allows emancipation at age 16 or 17. And so that is effectively a floor. I mean, if in that sense, and again, I think that it is it is a world of difference where you go from one parent with no other approval, just nothing, zero, to, okay, now you've got to have a judge, both parents, and the child. And then once they're on their own, once they're emancipated, then in turn they've got to make a decision. But going back, I mean, what inspired me are the stories of children. I mean, you know, one of the lines of one of the stories is, you know, there are a lot of tears at a 14-year-old's bachelorette party. This is really emotional, gripping stories that just, you know, cry out for some kind of solution. And I believe 1705 solves this problem by ending forced marriages of minors. There can no longer be a forced marriage in Texas of a minor. The minor has got to say, I want emancipated, and now I'm going to approve. And actually, I should point out that emancipations in Texas today are almost entirely 17-year-olds that have joined the U.S. military. And so, you know, obviously they have the means, they have, you know, they're serving their country in uniform. I think you might see an increase in emancipations. I don't think it'll be huge, but I think you might see an increase in Texas. But what I know you will end with 1705, what will stop, is minors being forced into marriage.
You passed this bill, or was passed with your help and others, in a session that was filled with challenges. Getting good bills passed was very difficult, but now it's passed, and it's sitting on Governor Greg Abbott's desk, possibly waiting for a signature, maybe a veto, maybe it'll just become law. Does it make a difference if he signs it, or if it just comes into law on its own?
However it becomes law is what I'm concerned about. And I will say that just in laying the bill out in committee, I read several of the stories of women who were children at the time who were forced into marriages, who did not want to go into marriages. Children who were picked up from high school in ninth grade and driven to the courthouse and put into a marriage that they did not want to be in. And watching my colleagues' jaws drop and seeing the emotional, visceral reaction of my fellow senators that said, we have got to stop this, we've got to bring an end to this, and the response from them of, I had no idea this happened in Texas. I thought this was something that happened in a third world country. I did not. It is beyond me that this can happen in Houston, Texas. This is just, my colleagues were absolutely blown away that this was going on, that this is a problem, that this is even a thing. And I'm very, very proud of their support, you know, of the unanimous passage of Senate Bill 1705 out of the Texas Senate, and near unanimous support that it received in the Texas House.
Senator Taylor, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Texas Senator Van Taylor, a Republican from Plano, sponsored the bill that would essentially end child forced marriages in Texas, but wasn't enough. What else needs to happen? More on that when we come back from this break. The phone line for questions and comments, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. To The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about forced marriages, underage marriages in Texas. Texas has the second highest rate for forced child marriages. So why is that? A new bill that was passed in the Texas legislature is sitting on Governor Greg Abbott's desk. Will he sign it? Will he disallow it to become law? Will he veto it? We're talking about that this afternoon. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And we're joined right now by Jeannie Smoot. She is the Senior Counsel for Policy and Strategy at the Tahereh Justice Center. Their organization helped gather evidence and led the way for the legislature to pass the Senate bill to ban this child marriages. Also with us is Victoria Mather. She is a law professor at St. Mary's University School of Law, specializing in family law. And also with us on the line is Travisha Williams. She is a survivor of the child marriages, forced marriages. And welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here. Travisha, tell me about your experience. How did you find yourself being married as an underage girl?
Well, I was that 14-year-old girl that was picked up from high school by her mother, carried to Justice of the Peace Court in Harris County, and married off to a 26-year-old man just out of prison that Senator Van Taylor talked about. It was a no-glam, legal, only by parental consent marriage, and that's the reason that I got involved with the bill.
Why were you being put into that marriage?
I believe, hindsight, I have not ever gotten a clear answer as to why my mother decided to put me in that marriage, but hindsight, I believe that it was because she was overwhelmed by the pressures that she, you know, seemed to have been under, and that was her way of getting rid of a problem. It wasn't my first time being forcibly separated from my mom. She, at the age of five, she packed my bags, had my sisters pack my bags, and carried me to a complete stranger's house, and I was there for 2 years. So it wasn't her first time using separation, forced separation, to get rid of a problem.
Did you know this man at all?
I knew him briefly through the church that he attended when he was released from prison. His step-grandmother was the head of that church, and it was a Pentecostal church in Houston, Texas, and that his step-grandmother was the one who planned the marriage with my mother, and so I did know him briefly before the marriage.
So what was life like?
Wow. It was violent, if there was one huge word that I could use to describe the marriage, because he was very abusive. And I recall the first time that he hit me, calling my mother and asking if I could return home, and she refused. She told me no. So I was left and forced, to stay in the marriage until I became of age and knew my rights, found out my rights, and was able to divorce him.
And he went back to jail eventually, right?
He did. He did go back to prison for rape.
The were you like thinking, what is going on here? Did you know that this was something that was possible?
I didn't know that it was possible. I remember at the age of, so this was shortly into my 14th year of age that this happened. So I remember at 13, them being my mother and the head of that church, talking about, possibly me getting married at some point and having children. And I thought it was, pretty bizarre, for one thing, because of my age. And but I didn't really grasp that they were so sincere about making that happen until this man was released from prison. And I, hindsight, I feel like it was their way of also trying to, or at least his grandmother's way of trying to ensure that he would, settle down, stay out of trouble, and not return to prison.
So you eventually filed for divorce just a few days after you turned 17. You were able to file the papers.
I was. He was incarcerated again, and that gave me a brief window of time while he was in jail before he got sentenced to prison again. It gave me a brief window of time to seek out my resources and find out my legal rights, and found out exactly, how to go about filing for a divorce.
And I imagine you didn't really have a whole lot of options, at least for being able to take care of yourself and also with the child.
I didn't. My daughter was a little over a year when he went back to prison the second time. And so, yes, I was a child and forced into an adult situation, and taking the responsibility of taking care of my child. So it was very difficult because of my age and the restrictions on, you know, work restrictions, you know, how to, you know, be able to get a job and, you know, it being enough pay to actually, you know, support the two of us. So it was a struggle. It was a real struggle.
Well, you did more than just get a job. You got your education, not just an education, but you got a doctorate in psychology. So those are major accomplishments for anybody.
Yeah, and I credit my faith. My faith was a huge factor in propelling me, you know, out of that situation, because I had to dig so deep within to find the strength and the courage to move on and realize that it wasn't my fault. You know, that my mother did that. It was, you know, that I still had a bright future in front of me in spite of it all, and that I was, you know, still going to be able to pursue my dreams, because at the age of 8, I wanted to be a lawyer. So I did pursue that career path, but then when I started taking my undergraduate courses, I was introduced to psychology, and that's the path I took instead. So,
your former husband is, do you? I guess he's the father of the child. Is there still some contact there?
There is absolutely no contact. I did try to let them have a relationship when she was 4, when he got out of prison the second time. And because of his level of violence against me, including threats to take my life, I was not able to allow them to have a relationship. And then he went to prison again. So it's my understanding he is out again. And there's not a relationship between him and myself, for sure. And there's not a relationship between he and my daughter either.
So that's just another act of bravery that you have, coming forward and talking about this issue, talking about this, what happened to you and your relationship with this man. And you're in the spotlight. You know, that's brave.
It does take a lot of courage because, you know, one of the jobs that I was able to get when he went to prison that second time was with the Texas Department of Criminal Justice Institutional Division for Men, ironically. That was the very first job I was able to get that would fully support me and my daughter. I remember going to the Texas Workforce Commission and seeing now hiring correctional officers, $18,000 a year. So I took that job because it would support the two of us. So, it's I know that mentality because I worked with men in that environment for about 4 years since my first major was criminal justice. And so, it takes a lot of courage to come forth about an issue like this when you're dealing with the nature of violence that I've dealt with.
So you were a jail guard or detention officer?
I was a correctional officer with in the Texas prison systems at the Texas Death Row Unit for Men.
And so, tell me, now you work with have you founded an organization called Real Beauty Inside It Out? What does that do?
It is designed. I'm so passionate, especially about the mother-daughter relationship and helping mothers and daughters work through the conflict and the turbulences that are inherently related to that tween and teen stage when, you know, they love each other but they can't stand each other. Or I do a seminar called I Love You But I Can't Stand You Right Now, and moms and daughters show up in droves for that seminar just because it helps them understand each other better and it helps them learn effective communication skills to where they can see themselves working through that, you know, 4 to 6 year window of time when it's so chaotic and hormones are raging, moms are going through premenopause or in menopause or postmenopause, and girls are going through puberty. So it's a very difficult time in their lives, but it's not a time to throw in a towel. So I created that organization to facilitate that process.
Jeannie Smoot over at the Tahereh Justice Center, how unique is Trevisha's story?
Well, there are aspects of Trevisha's story that I think carry across on many of the cases that we see. Certainly, there are a wide range of fact patterns that arise in these cases, these circumstances in which there are some serious, insidious circumstances behind underage marriages. They can happen for all sorts of reasons. You know, the abusive or neglectful parent who wants to offload a problem, exploitative parent who in some cases may actually trade the marriage of their child for their own financial gain, girls who can be targeted and groomed by older male predators who seek marriage with them as a way to circumvent statutory rape laws. But often we also see cases in which early marriage is expected within that family, either to prevent pregnancy or sex outside of marriage or to address it when it happens. And it's also expected that the parents in those contexts will control the decision about when and to whom the girl gets married. So I would say that there's a really startling diversity in terms of the kinds of families and the kinds of circumstances in which underage marriage arises, in which it can be forced upon a person who doesn't want it at all and isn't ready for it. But I think there's also a really consistent across-the-board commonality, no matter what the personal or family background of the individual is, and that is the common vulnerability of a minor, how legally and practically disabled they are to protect or advocate for themselves. Imagine, Trevisha couldn't even drive herself to the courthouse to seek a divorce at the age at which she was married, let alone know and fully appreciate and exercise what her rights were. These are also circumstances often, you know, particularly even if the teen girl is older, say 16 or 17, where those cases can fall between the cracks of CPS protection. And so they can't help themselves, and yet when they seek help, none is forthcoming. And that's really the kind of devastating doors closed situation that we were so keen to try to address through SB 1705 and other efforts.
But it's just the story that Trevisha tells us is so incredible, and you're saying, yeah, it's pretty dramatic, but, you know, there's other Trevishas out there.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, you know, we had a number of stunning realizations when we came to do this work and to undertake this legislative push. We have worked for many years, for the last 20 years, the Tahereh Justice Center has worked on cases involving survivors of domestic violence, rape, human trafficking, forced marriage, and all the intersections between these. And we've had an office in Houston since 2009, but it was really only when we started to work on cases of forced marriages ourselves to document how many of these cases were arising around the country, many involving young girls, and then to do further research to pull the statewide statistics that, as Senator Taylor said, made our jaws drop, right? To see that nearly 40,000 individuals under age 18 were married in Texas between the years 2000 and 2014, and especially to see the young ages and sometimes large age differences, and to know the stories that we were seeing in parallel tracks as we did our client work, as we did our national technical assistance on forced marriage cases, and really to have that, you know, that gripping realization as to what the laws were basically turning a blind eye to the potential for in terms of these at-risk girls.
We're talking about underage forced marriages, coerced marriages in the state of Texas. There's a law that is on Governor Greg Abbott's desk. It's not a law yet. Either it's going to get his signature, or it'll become law through time, or he could veto it. That's on his desk right now. What does that law do? What are there any exceptions? What are some things that can be done in the future to make the law even more effective? What happens to girls as young as 12 years old are pushed into matrimony, usually with a man who is much, much older than they are? UN says this is a violation of human rights. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Our phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Julie, I'll take your call when we come back from this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. A forced marriage is when one or both parties enter into a union without full, free, informed consent. Further, even if both parties enter the marriage with that consent, the union can later become forced marriage if one or both parties are forced to stay in it. But when you have someone who is under the age of 18, are they really able to provide that full consent? That becomes an underage forced marriage, and that actually is a problem here in the state of Texas. We're finding out that that is something that now is being taken care of or being addressed by this Texas legislature in the most recent session, and we're going to wait to see if Governor Greg Abbott will sign that law or veto it by Sunday, Father's Day. That is the cutoff for this bill to become law, or all the bills that were passed in the legislature. If you've got a question or a comment as we talk about this issue, the number is 210-614-8980, and Julie is on the line. And Julie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey. All right, I have two quick comments. Number one, we keep couching this discussion in terms of child marriage, when I suspect the statistics will be that this is almost, who knows? That's my question. What are the statistics in terms of this happening to girls who are 12 versus boys who are 12? So I think there's an issue of, you know, why are powerful men allowing powerful men to have this happen and allow them to exploit kids? The second is, to me, you know, you've expressed like shock. I agree. I mean, this is insanity. A 12-year-old, as a matter of law, cannot consent to be married. That's why we have laws that don't let kids, you know, enter into contracts or own property. We don't let people take them over state laws, state lines. It's insanity. That's all I have to say.
Okay, well, Julie, thank you for the call. Jeannie Smoot from the Tahereh Justice Center, can you talk about how this affects both genders?
Sure, absolutely. I think Julie raises a very important point, which is that child marriage does overwhelmingly impact girls the most. The vast majority of these cases are ones involving an underage girl marrying an adult man. And so I think that's very important to note, even while noting that there was also, at least according to the statistics that we pulled, you know, a 12-year-old boy in those numbers in the year 2005, at least one. And so I do want to make sure that we are recognizing vulnerability in the laws that we pass to address these things. The other point that Julie raises is a really important one about the disconnect up to this point between civil laws in Texas on minimum marriage age and criminal laws on statutory rape or other kinds of child protective laws that we have that are out of sync and work at odds with each other. I mean, I think, you know, what's really stunning is to realize that some of the children being approved for marriages by judges, their spouses could be prosecuted even within marriage for aggravated sexual assault because there's no defense, no marriage defense, if the child is under age 14. So in this way, any time a marriage license has been issued in the state to a child under that age of 14, the state has effectively been turning a blind eye to a first-degree felony, which is punishable by up to life in prison. You know, the same acts that can land a man on a sex offender registry for life if committed outside of marriage will instead enable him to head for a gift registry, if the state licenses the parties to be married. And so that, I think, is just wrong and undermines or shows one way in which the current laws undermine the child protective purposes of other laws in the state.
Trevisha Williams, a forced marriage survivor, what do you think about the bill that was passed in the legislature, and what do you think Greg Abbott ought to do about that?
Well, I urged him in another heartfelt letter just about a week or so ago to pass the bill because you're talking about stolen childhoods and the exploitation of the vulnerabilities of children. And children should be able to be children as long as they're children. There are so many things that are going on with them as far as, you know, psychologically and emotionally and physically. They're just not developed enough and mature enough to be in a situation that only adults should be in.
Victoria Mather is here. She's a law professor at St. Mary's University School of Law, specializing in, she's a specialist in family law. Can you tell me about, Professor Mather, about this emancipation process that is now in this new bill? So in order for anyone under 18, they have to go through emancipation. And so what does that involve? And that's only, you have to be at least 16 to be emancipated, right?
Yes, that's right. 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds may be emancipated. However, they have to live apart from their parents or guardians and be self-supporting, and the court must appoint an attorney ad litem before that emancipation process can be completed. The court has to find that it's in the best interest of the minor to be able to make his or her own decisions. I think this would greatly help in the rare case where we might have a marriage with a minor and an adult.
So the law as it stands today is that a child, anyone under 18, can be married with a signature from one or one parent, right? It doesn't take both, just one.
Actually, right now, you're right about 16 and 17-year-olds. They can be married with the signature of just one parent. Children who are under the age of 16 must seek a court order. And again, a guardian or an attorney ad litem will be appointed to represent the child, to act as their advocate. And again, the court cannot agree to a marriage for someone who's under the age of 16 unless it's in the best interest of the minor. That changed in probably the mid-2000s.
But we're seeing that that is still happening, though. Even with those protections, we still see children as young as, you know, 14 getting married, right? So what's happening? How does that happen?
Yes, it should not be happening unless the court finds it's in the best interest of the minor. Some minors may want to seek a marriage as young as that, although it probably is not in their own best interest. All I can say about that is probably members of the judicial system and attorneys are not doing the job they ought to be doing if children are forced into marriage at this point in time.
Okay, Jeannie Smoot over at the Tahoe Rae Justice Center, senior counsel. So we're hearing now from Professor Mather at St. Mary's University School of Law saying there are some protections already in place, but they're not really being followed. So what does that mean to you with this bill being passed and becomes law? Is it going to be as fully enforced as you would hope, or will it still be kind of Swiss cheesy?
Well, I definitely think it'll be an incredible sea change from what we have now. For one thing, as Senator Taylor remarked and as Professor Mather outlined, to be emancipated, there's a more independent objective standard that has to be met, and that is whether the minor is actually, for all intents and purposes, steering their own ship, you know, managing their own affairs, capable of self-sufficiency, and therefore circumstances in which we can better trust that it is that minor that's making the decision, whatever that follow-on decision might be, to marry or to do anything else. So, and I think importantly, under Texas law, it's the minor themselves that can bring the petition in their own name. And so that's another measure of who's driving the decision.
But they're still a minor, and, you know, you really don't have full capacity at that age.
Well, that's part of the test that the court is going to be doing. And I think what also is important is that even if the minor gets through a process like that, and there are some kind of circumstances that are pulling the strings for that minor, and that's not detected by the process, not detected by the appointed attorney, or this new understanding that judges will have, which is that they're supposed to be looking strictly within the emancipation context at that set of criteria and nothing more, that even if that's the case, upon being emancipated, that girl will be advised of her rights as an emancipated minor. She won't walk away from a courthouse as Trevisha did, not even sure what she could do to get out of the marriage if she wanted to. And then legally, she'll have a vastly different terrain she can navigate as an emancipated minor than as an unemancipated minor. So in Texas right now, runaway youth can be considered status offenders. They can be taken into custody by police without a warrant, and shelters, and even, you know, kind of a Good Samaritan family that might take in someone and offer them a place place to stay could be charged with harboring a runaway. Minors can't directly petition for a protective order against their own parents, for example. They can't enter binding legal contracts. So I think there's a host of ways in which those disabling conditions will be lifted by this. And so even if a case or two gets through that we would have hoped that this bill would have stopped, very importantly, the person emerging from that courthouse is in a vastly different legal position, at least, to make her own choices about her future, and practically, too, because of the consequences that'll have on her ability to contract with others to rent a place of her own and that sort of thing.
But as I understand it, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know, but when you get married, when you are a minor, you are automatically become an adult, right?
You do, but nobody, once that sort of magic wand moment happens, tells you what it means. And so if you don't know that, you can, in fact, languish in an abusive relationship, as unfortunately Trevisha did, before you're able to even exercise those newfound rights you didn't even know because you weren't advised that you have. In addition, of course, at those younger ages, it's practically very difficult to make your way out of that marriage. You don't know how you'd support yourself. You don't know how you'd, I mean, and economic reasons are one of the major drivers that battered women stay in abusive marriages, because they don't have another place to go or a way to take care of themselves or their children if they were to leave that violent home. So I think this test first enables us also to see whether that minor is in a place not only to have a firm legal footing, but also to have a decent practical footing to have the ability to escape an abusive marriage or in a marriage that they don't want, if that's what they're facing.
Okay, another break. When we come back, we're going to hear from callers Stephen and Grace. Also talk about some of the issues that dominate when we have these forced marriages. We know that there is a lot of domestic violence. We know that the young brides end up maybe dropping out of school, having mental health issues, or living in poverty. What can be done? Hopefully this is a way to try to alleviate those conditions. And the phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source is going to continue after this 1 minute break. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin. Davies, Texas has the second highest rate for child marriages in the U.S. after West Virginia. That could be changing as a new law is waiting for Governor Greg Abbott to sign. That could make it much more difficult for minors to get married in Texas. Our phone line is 210-614-8980. Stephen is on the line. Stephen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir. I just have two small subjects to bring up here. I'm sorry, three. First of all, I do not condone the whole thing of a forced marriage, especially when it's a minor to a much older person. But at the same time, here in Texas, I do understand how some families are willing to have their children get married at a younger age. Many of the families in Texas, especially South Texas, they come from not only Mexico, but, you know, Venezuela, anywhere in South America, because they're running away from crime. So oftentimes, so they can get amnesty, they'll have their children over here. And not only that, we also have a high military base in Texas. So what do people in low-income families do? They usually join the military. I've seen this done times and time again. So I'm wondering on some input here, like,
okay. So you want to know, like, who are these people who are getting married so young?
Right. Yes.
So we want to
test the main basis of this population, right? Because
okay,
it makes sense.
All right, Stephen. Okay. So let's go to Jeannie Smoot. So who are these people?
Well, we don't know all of the demographics of the statewide statistics that we pulled, but of course, in the stories that are coming to light, they come from all different backgrounds, all different demographic backgrounds, and for all different reasons. I think what Stephen just raised are a couple of different points that I'd like to address. One, with respect to individuals who join the military, then they would surely be eligible for emancipation and be able to marry if that was a choice of theirs. With respect to those families that might be coming from other backgrounds, an immigrant background, and seeking through marriage, it sounded like, Stephen, you were suggesting some sort of immigration status for, say, the girl to be married. I think one of the sad truths of the work that we've done over many years is how much that initial desire to have a stable legal status can then be used as a tool of abuse later in a marriage. It can be held out from a woman. The right papers can be not filed or not renewed, and therefore that promise of legal status can actually be a constant threat of pulling that status and keep someone trapped in a violent relationship. So I wouldn't. Those are all reasons, either with respect to the military, that I think there is a solution offered through this bill for that situation as well, based on the independence of that person, or with respect to the other immigration-related reasons, actually more cause for concern and circumspection and not encouraging that forward than anything else.
Another caller with Grace. Grace, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a comment first and then a question. I have always felt in my heart that some of these laws are made by men in power that are perverted themselves, and that's why children are not protected. My question is, isn't this in fact legalized pedophilia?
Grace, thank you for the call. Well, let me go to our legal expert here, Victoria Mather, law professor at St. Mary's School of Law. Is it legalized pedophilia? I mean, we heard earlier from Jeannie Smoot talking about how if you're marrying someone that younger than 14 years old, that basically it is.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. It is, but it is in fact legal under the current rules. If someone does have permission to marry and they marry at a very young age, marry someone much older, yes, it would be. I think that was not the intention at the time the laws were passed, but that is the effect, which I suppose is part of what's going on not only here in Texas but nationwide. There's a lot of these bills coming out through the state legislatures trying to raise the age, the minimum age for marriage, and to offer additional protections for these minor children.
Trevisha Williams, you're our survivor of a coerced marriage. When we're talking about the capacity of young women trying to assert their rights in order to escape from this marriage, do you think that we're attributing the right amount of capacity to these individuals? Do they need more help? Do they need organizations in order to guide them through it?
Yeah, they definitely need more help. They do need organizations that they can, it's all about knowing about those organizations too. So they're really in a tough spot, like I was, because I literally just started, I picked up the phone book and started calling different organizations to see, where my help was.
Tell me about that experience. So is that literally what happened? You picked up a phone book and started paging through it?
Well, I knew to start somewhere in the neighborhood of human resources, and so that's where I started. As I got assistance with getting more skills, gaining more skills to get a part-time job while I went to school, I also found out other resources where I could learn additional skills to get a higher-paying job. So I started with human resources, but not everyone would know to start there. So right. Yes, there definitely needs to be organizations that can help them through that process.
And when did you look around and say, isn't there somebody out there? Because we didn't have like the Tara Ray Center at that time, I don't think, that was reaching out and looking for people to help, or this other organization called UnchainedAtLast.org, which is a national organization trying to end coerced marriages. You were really basically on your own. There wasn't anyone out there looking for you to help you.
No, there wasn't, and there certainly wasn't the internet. So I definitely was just out there, and thankfully the human resources in East Texas, which is where I was at the time that I filed for my divorce, was able to steer me into the right directions in terms of more skills and a better paying job and a legal organization that could facilitate my request for a divorce.
Jeannie Smoot over at the Tahereh Justice Center. With the new law, if it becomes law, it would be 16 and 17 can get married if they have go through the process of emancipation. Is that satisfactory?
Absolutely. We are very pleased with where that bill is going to take the state. And I can tell you, though, that we will be watching pretty closely to see how it's put into practice and whether, you know, in practice, it provides the kind of strong protection that we hope it will. So if girls remain at risk, we'll come back and push hard to tighten the laws further. And certainly, we realize that more needs to be done, both with education and outreach and with child protective services responses and trainings to make sure that forced marriages are headed off at the pass well before the courthouse doors. I would say that we're in space now where we do have more resources to offer girls at risk now. So we have a website, www.preventforcedmarriage.org. And nationally, we work as well as in four states through our direct offices to provide assistance and guidance on these kinds of cases. And I think that's a big difference in the last, say, 5 to 10 years since we started alerting the country to this sort of problem.
Frequently, when we have laws that are passed with the best intentions, there are unintended consequences that we don't like. Do you anticipate maybe instead that now they just won't get married, now they'll just shack up with the and not actually get married? And would that be a problem? How could that be identified and solved, Jeannie Smoot?
Well, I think I can't predict what genuine couples will do in response to this law, but I would expect that many of those who were keen to get married before will wait to get married or will seek emancipation, and that those folks will only delay their plans by a few months, perhaps, before they tie the knot, and that others will be spared a lifetime of heartache. So I actually see perhaps it's also a good period of time for them to give a little bit more thought to their decision perhaps avoid some of those other consequences, like the up to 80% divorce rates of underage marriages and the kind of other shortcomings of getting married too early and maybe cutting short your education or your employment opportunities in a way that puts you in a much worse spot down the line.
Is it still possible for these people to go to other states to get the underage marriage?
Well, certainly, depending on the other state and what the other state's laws are.
Like Louisiana, for example. Yeah.
Well, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, I'm sorry, whether Louisiana has a provision that says they only will grant marriage licenses to in-state minors. Some states do. So that may not be possible in all other states, but it is one of the reasons that the Tahereh Justice Center is working in a concerted, proactive way to drive this movement around the country. Texas is poised to be a leader in the fight against forced child marriage, and to make sure that this patchwork that exists now across the country is buttoned down and that we don't have all of these loopholes across state laws that will continue to put girls at risk until they're closed.
Trevisha Williams, you are our survivor of a coerced marriage, and you've accomplished so much in your life. And this was a tough legislative session. Getting any bill passed was tough, and this bill was passed, I think, in large part to you being able to step up and being able to identify and put a face on the problem. So I think this is another accomplishment that we can give to you, that you've earned.
Yeah, and I am so overjoyed to have been so profoundly instrumental in that process. When I found out this was still going on, I could not help but get involved and put a face on the problem so that, you know, this can be discontinued, because every child should be able to, you know, live their childhood out through and through.
All right, Trevisha Williams, thank you so much. She's a motivational speaker, a child bride survivor. Jeannie Smoot, also with us, the Senior Counsel and Policy for Strategy at the Tahereh Justice Center. And also with us is Victoria Mather. She is a law professor at St. Mary's University School of Law. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Kim Johnson, Jan Ross Piedad, and David Martin Davies. Management and oversight provided by News Director Shelley Koffler, and production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation and the GAC Health Foundation.